Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to totally spin the table around here and talk about something that hopefully you never have to deal with, and that is the subject of litigation, lawsuits. And we're not talking about the TV stuff. We're talking about real stuff that happens. And so I've invited a special guest, and he really is special. Mr. Jim Rose is on the line with me. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, David. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's good to have you on the program. Now, let me get all the appropriate disclaimer stuff out there, Jim. Okay, so Jim is an attorney, and he is a really good guy, and I know that because I've worked with Jim, and Jim actually has represented and been an advisor to my firm and to me as our corporate counsel, I guess, if you will. And so he's been our business attorney, and I have relied on Jim to help us as we've needed him over the years. So that was why it was an easy phone call to you, Jim, to get you on the phone here with me. So let me give some contact information for our listeners. RiceRoseLaw.com is the website. And the telephone number is 257-1222. That's 386 area code, 257-1222. And they're on Seabreeze Boulevard. What is that dome thing, Jim? What is that, like a Byzantine?
The cupola.
Okay, there you go. Is it made of brass or copper? What is
that
thing?
It's kind of a copper composite.
But, all right. It's beautiful. You can't miss it.
Well, I tell you, Dave, when we have people call in, I hear my staff going, yeah, we're located at 222 Seabreeze Boulevard, big sand-colored building with a copper cupola. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Everybody knows where it is.
All right, well, that's you. All right, well, excellent. And let's see, you got your law degree back in 1982.
Way back when.
Wow, okay. So Jim and his partner, Paul Rice Jr., they have been practicing together, what, 25 years now?
27.
Wow. Boy, that's a long time.
Yeah, it really is.
Excellent.
It's a good
relationship. But you know what? Yeah, great relationship, and we'll get Paul on for another time. But what I love is that you've been in the area, you've been in the community, and you know the law, and you also know the 7th Judicial Circuit as well.
Right. That's 31 years, Dave, that I've been doing this. So yeah, you get to know what the ins and outs of things, that's for sure.
Well, and that's an important thing we're going to get to, because when somebody is in litigation, and I know that you can speak very well to this, Jim, it's a very unpleasant thing for everybody involved. Nobody really has fun in litigation. I mean, you know, certainly people want to win, but it is not a fun experience, is it?
Absolutely not, David. Anytime you get in litigation, it's very stressful for people. Most people have never sued, but some of them are sued for just one time in their life, and it's really an unknown situation for them. So it's very high stress. People get upset about it, and you try to reassure them when they come in if they're being sued. But, you know, they're going to worry about it.
Well, and I think that's why it's so critical. Of course, that's why I've got you on the program today, Jim. And just also, before I forget, Jim also hosts his own radio program,
right,
and that is the Rice Rose Legal Forum radio show. And so that's pretty cool. So Jim is an old radio veteran. So let's go through a couple of scenarios, because I think people really, the first thing I think is most important, and you can speak to this, Jim, is if, let's first start with somebody being on the receiving end, and it is, maybe they think it's coming, maybe they don't, maybe they, something happens, and they get that visit from the sheriff's car, right?
Right, yeah, the sheriff will generally be the one, so not Ben Johnson, but
right,
one of his deputies, the process server, will actually be the serving agent. And you'll be served if you are sued with a summons, it's called, along with a copy of the lawsuit and any exhibits that are attached to that. Now, David, what happens from there is the summons says that you have 20 days to file responsive pleadings in regard to the lawsuit. And you need to make sure that you file something, because if you don't, you can be defaulted. And that essentially means that you agree with any of the allegations in the lawsuit. So it's very important that you don't be the ostrich and just stick your head in the ground and hope it goes away.
Yeah, that's one letter. That's why it's served by the Sheriff's Department.
Exactly.
Is to make sure that they can say, look, this person received this document, and you know, so that's not one you throw on the kitchen counter and say, oh, I forgot to pay that bill.
Absolutely not, because the sheriff files an affidavit saying that he served you on such and such a date, and the attorney who's bringing the lawsuit will calendar that the 20 days up, and on the 21st day, they're going to file a motion for default if nothing is filed in court.
Which basically means, like you said, that's it. Unless there are extraordinary circumstances, you're done.
Yeah, and so you don't want to do it. Even if you owe the money or the allegations of the suit are true, you want to be able to not be defaulted so you have time to address the issues in the suit, perhaps negotiate a settlement, and not just be taken down the road in the judicial system without any input from them.
Yeah, you want to be able to have some control, even if you do owe or you are responsible. Yeah, I did that. Yeah, I owe that. Well, you want to have some time to orderly conduct yourself and have some control. Otherwise,
right.
You're out of control, right?
And you need to do that. And you need to go see an attorney to see what the ramifications of the lawsuit are. Even, again, if you know you owe the money, there are certain things that happen in the lawsuit that if you don't respond, for example, they could get the attorney could get a judgment against you. They get their attorney's fees as part of the award, and then they can get things like writs of garnishment and writs of attachment and take your stuff. So you need to know all the ins and outs of what's going to happen, even again if you are liable for whatever the allegations are of the lawsuit.
All right, so very serious thing to take and to respond. And so you've got 20 days to respond. So you've been served. And this is literally when it's so critical for somebody to get in touch with an attorney,
right,
and get representation and be able to respond. And that's really one of the, I think, probably the most important parts of this process, Jim, is for me, that's easy. If that happens to me, I know I can call you,
right,
and I've
right.
got your number memorized.
Right.
So, but for somebody who doesn't have an attorney, you know, especially somebody who's not in business, maybe they're just an individual, you know, they're not used to dealing with business stuff that does have a lot of legal flavor. They aren't used to that. So what do they do? Do they just open up the phone book? I mean, how do they or ask friends, or how do they go about finding an attorney?
Yeah, basically, David, you know, the Internet's a wonderful place now. You can get a lot of information on everybody, just like financial planners like yourself. Attorneys are right there. On the Internet, you can review all the credentials and the expertise of the attorney. The best place, though, is really your colleagues and your friends, knowing if they've had a positive outcome or positive relationship with an attorney, if they trust that attorney. Because when people come in and they're not used to going through the legal action, they're kind of spinning around and just don't know what's going on. It's so important that you have a good relationship with the attorney. And a good attorney is not going to just tell you everything's peachy keen. A good attorney is going to review the lawsuit with you, tell you where you stand, and tell you that what your chances are of prevailing, or here's the options of what you can do, and kind of guide you through the entire process, and hopefully do it up front and do it as expeditiously as possible to save you money.
That's very good. I think that you're right on, Jim. You know, having had an experience with an attorney, somebody else, you know, checking around, asking other people what they've experienced, I can tell you, I just tell our listeners, I just referred one of my clients to Jim and to Rice and Rose for some guidance in a business transaction. And I just, to update you, Jim, I just talked to them and they're very happy. And
good.
See, so I was able to make that referral, and because I know about my experience with you, and so now they can benefit from that. So I would encourage the listeners to definitely to talk to their friends, to their colleagues, or to business people and say, hey, you know, do you know a good attorney? And it also should pivot on the area of expertise, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, we're talking about litigation, so you're looking for what we call a litigator, right?
Litigator in a particular area. For example, if you're going through a mortgage foreclosure, you want somebody that does real estate law and real estate litigation. If you're going through a business dispute, you want somebody who does that. If you're going through a divorce, you want somebody like Paul Rice, who's a board-certified family law attorney. So, yeah, it's the age of expertise right now, for sure.
Yeah, and you made a good point there, Jim. You know, let's say somebody, an attorney, is really good at estate planning or trust work or wills. They're not going to necessarily be the person to represent you in a divorce.
Exactly. Now, I might add, David, one of the things that you look at, too, is depending on the kind of lawsuit that you have. For example, if you're being sued for an automobile accident, you're going to want to notify your insurance agent, because part of what the insurance does is it provides you representation. Or if somebody slips and falls on your property, your homeowner's insurance, will provide you an attorney. And that the attorney is picked by the insurance company in that case. But the good thing is the insurance company will pay for the attorney. You'll have to pay your deductible, of course. But once you've gotten to a certain threshold, the attorney appointed by the insurance company will represent you for no extra money.
That's because they're representing not only you, but they're representing the insurance company
exactly.
as well. And you know what? It'd be fine. It's fine with me. If they're paying the tab, they can pick.
Well, exactly. And that's why you get insurance.
It's right.
If something happens, you want them to take care of it. And they hire people with the expertise in that particular field, if it's an automobile accident, defending that. So, and sometimes it's a good idea to also consult with your own attorney about
sure.
it. Sure. Keep an eye on things, because the insurance defense attorneys are wearing two hats to a large degree. They represent you technically, but they're working for the insurance company too. So,
yeah, that's something we don't want to make a mistake about.
Right.
If you're just joining us, Jim Rose is on the line with me. RiceRoseLaw.com is the website. The number is 386-257-1222. They're over there on Seabreeze Boulevard. Quick break, Jim. We'll be right back.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. We got Jim Rose on the line. He is a business attorney. He's also state and trust. What are some of the other areas of expertise,
and real
Jim?
Estate. David.
And real estate. All right. So, because you can't be a master at everything, right?
That's correct. In this day and age.
All right. So we're talking about litigation. We're talking about if you're getting sued,
yep.
And because we do live in a world where things happen and legal process and litigation is part of how we deal with things and resolve them. So let's go back to kind of walking through the process so that people understand a little bit better, maybe are not quite so intimidated or unprepared. So somebody is sued, they're served, they have this 20-day period to respond. They reach out to an attorney. So let's say they come in, they meet with you, Jim.
Right.
You go over their options, you explain the case to them, you tell them what's going on. And then what's the next step?
Well, usually if they retain us at that point, David, then
okay.
we're going to file either some kind of motion to, if there's a technical defect in the pleadings or if the pleadings don't state a cause of action, we'll file motions to get it before the court and say this is not done correctly or some other way we can try to knock it out on a procedural issue. Eventually, there'll be an answer filed in which you respond to the particular allegations, admitting or denying the allegations and raising whatever defenses you may have.
I got you.
To it. For example, if somebody's being sued because the person says they owe them money, well, you can have a situation that, well, that's untrue. They say I owe $5,000, but I have receipts for $3,000.
Okay.
And so you raise that. And then once you've done that, then the attorneys go into what's called the discovery phase. That's when the attorneys on each side are going to reach out to the other side and say, I want to see all the documents that support your position
okay.
or whatever documents you have in regard to the case. I'm asking you questions under oath called interrogatories to get more information about your claim. And there are other tools that we have so we can educate ourselves to the merits of the other side's case. A lot of what the attorneys do is educate each other. Because when an attorney is representing somebody, they're hearing one side.
and that can be a pretty skewed perspective, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so you reach out, and then the attorney says, well, not really. This is how we see it. We have these documents. So eventually what you want to do is you get all the documents in place and you get a better understanding of the merits of the case. And then once you've gotten that, then you talk to your client and say, well, here's what I'm seeing. Here's what the judge is going to see. And based on that, you may have some exposure up to X number of dollars. Therefore, I think it's a good idea to try to reach out and negotiate some kind of settlement in that area. Because as we're going along, one of the things you have to think about is that the attorney is being paid by the hour. And so the client, if it's all a net ball game, you don't want to spend $10,000 defending a $5,000 claim.
Very good point.
You want to go ahead, you want to try to figure out the merits and then try to resolve it as quickly as possible, particularly business people. Because if you're involved in litigation and business, you've already lost.
That's
it's
right.
It's a matter of mitigating the losses.
Well, and I think there's a real good point you made, Jim, and that is that we're talking about responding to a lawsuit. And so when you respond to a lawsuit, you hire an attorney and you said, you know, use the term retain. So there may be a deposit, so to speak, that the person needs to put down.
Right.
And then there is going to be an hourly charge. But that's how it's done. And it's not, you know, there are other ways that you might pay the attorney if you are the one suing. But if you're on the receiving end of that lawsuit, you're basically going to pay for it. So that's, you know, you do have to evaluate, and that's where I think the experience comes in for the attorney. How many cases they've tried? Have they litigated? Have they been in court? How many times? What kind of stuff have they dealt with? Because they'll know kind of how these things go. And that is, boy, that's worth 10 times, you know, 10 times that billable rate, Jim.
Well, absolutely. If you get somebody's experience and has done this kind of case before and seen and been in front of the judge and knows how the judge's predilections, they're going to say, here's what I think is going to happen pretty quickly. And then rather than spending a bunch of money and figuring that out, you know, in 6 months and thousands of dollars later, you might cut right to the chase and say, well, I think you got exposure. I think you should offer the money and let's just get some closure here.
And if you're doing that, let's say they've met with you, Jim, and they're talking with you about maybe you say, okay, look, I think you need to nip this in the bud. You know, you're going to end up paying something. Let's look at a settlement. So what happens then? You the attorney then that's representing the client, reach out to the other attorney and say, we'd like to propose a settlement?
Right, and we start negotiating a settlement. If it's a money situation, if they're claiming that they're owed $10,000, you have some defenses, you say, well, we paid you this, we did some services for you that you should have paid, we think it's, you know, $4,000, but we're willing to pay you $6,000 just because we want to get rid of it. And then attorneys negotiate, and if they can come to a settlement, they enter into a settlement agreement, where whatever, and each side says, okay, even though I think I'm owed 10, I'm willing to take 6. The other side says, even though I think I only owe 4, we're willing to do 6. And then the defendant would pay the money to the plaintiff. And then within the settlement agreement, there will be a stipulation that everybody waives any other further claim in regard to the initial claim.
And that puts it to bed.
That puts it to bed, and you get closure. And David, what we find sometimes, or a lot of people who are not experienced business people or in litigation, they're offended. You know, they say, wait a minute, I didn't do anything. And,
right.
And they say, you know, I'm going to fight this to the end because of the principal.
Principal, right.
And then I give them my principal speech. You know, the principal in litigation is when, like a civil rights matter, you do things for principal for that. But if it's just somebody claiming money, again, you don't want to spend $10,000 over something that you could get out of $5,000. Even though, you know, it may have to hurt your pride or whatever, you just need to resolve it, get out, and get over the issue, and be done with it.
Move on down the line, because
it is,
especially for business owners, it's very expensive for them to, not just a cost, of course, there's a distraction, there's interruption of their normal
absolutely.
Stuff.
And you can't recover, you know, the more money, more time, rather, that your client deals with, they're not going to get paid for that. They can't recover that as part of their damages.
Mm-mm-mm.
So you got to really take that into account.
Very good. You're just joining us. Jim Rose is on the line with me, helping me kind of walk you through just every man's explanation of how litigation works. And Jim can be contacted 386-257-1222, 222 Seabreeze Boulevard, ricerosenlaw.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we're back. Jim Rose is on the line with me. RiceRoseLaw.com is a website. And Jim, I want to get to, because we can answer some of the other things that would be involved with you when you're on the receiving end of the lawsuit. We can also address over on the being the plaintiff, being the person who files a lawsuit. So if somebody's been wronged in whatever capacity it is, or owed something, or somebody's done something to hurt them in some way, and a lot of this does end up involving money, their first step then is, instead of, you know, being the notification, they actually then go to the attorney to talk with the attorney and discuss with the attorney about hiring them to represent them and then pursuing the lawsuit and filing it.
That's correct, David. And when we have somebody come in who believe that they have been wronged by somebody else, for example, they believe they're owed money from them, basically I go through a little formula with them. And it's essentially, it starts out, how much are you suing over? What do you believe your damages are? How much will it cost to pursue? What are your chances of winning? How does it impact your quality of life and vis-a-vis how much time it'll take you, the stress level of being involved in litigation? And then the big one is, if you get a judgment, can you collect?
Good point.
Florida is a terrible creditor state for unsecured creditors. People sometimes think that if they get a judgment against somebody else, like somebody's just going to stroke them a check, which is not true. It's Florida is just littered with uncollected judgments. And again, you don't want to spend a bunch of money. You're already out money. So you got that old adage, good money after bad.
Yeah.
You don't want to spend money just so you can get a nice, pretty judgment that you'll never be able to collect.
That's a good point, because, you know, if the person is, for lack of a better word, a deadbeat,
yeah.
And they don't have any money, and you say, I'm going to sue you for everything you got, and they say, go ahead.
Yeah, and even if they're not a deadbeat, is the way it works in our state, Dave.
Right.
Give you an example. You sue, somebody owes you money, and you file suit, and you get a judgment against the individual. Well, if the individual, for $10,000, just take that. Well, if that individual's married, that judgment cannot be used to take anything that is owned by the husband and wife.
If they've got everything joint, or if it's in like IRAs, or
right.
There's other protected assets, right?
But so anything that is owned by husband and wife is not, you can't touch. If the person owns a house but it's homestead, you can't touch that. IRAs, 401ks, and cash value insurance policies, and many other things are exempt under our statute. And if the person is working, but the person is supporting a spouse or minor children, you can't garnish their wages.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very difficult. The defendant does not even have to go bankrupt or have nothing. They're just very difficult to collect regardless.
Well, so you've got that. So that's a reality check you're going to give them.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very helpful. And I think the other thing, of course, is, which I'm sure you address with your clients, is what is the potential blowback? You know, if you do sue, what is the, you know, let's talk about, hey, they might countersue.
Yeah, exactly. They could file a counterclaim.
And if they win, guess what? You might owe their attorney fees, too.
Yeah, the way our laws work, David, as far as recovering your attorney's fees, you either have to have a contract in which there's a paragraph that says, in case of litigation, the prevailing party shall recover the cost of attorney's fees. If you've just loaned money to somebody and you don't have a note or you don't, and within the document you have signed, it doesn't have that magic phrase, you can't recover your attorney's fees.
How about that?
And then the second way you can recover your attorney's fees is if there's a statute that allows recovery of attorney's fees. We often have run into situations where somebody on the cheat just says, well, I'm just going to loan this person some money, but I don't want to go to an attorney to do it because I know.
Yeah, because that costs money, right?
Yeah. It's friends and family especially, and that's where it gets tricky. And then they come in and say, well, he owes me $10,000. There's no doubt he owes you $10,000. And then I explain the facts of life as far as the collectability, the cost, the inability
yeah.
to cover your attorney's fees. And I said, man, if you can get him to pay you $5,000 that 10, you're going to be money ahead. Right from the get-go. And it's hard for people to accept that, but we as lawyers, again, we're trying to just, we don't make the decision, but we outline the options, the benefits, and the detriment of certain causes of action, certain ways of proceeding.
I don't think there's a better example, Jim, of, the old adage of penny wise, pound foolish. You know, people sometimes, and I routinely tell people, you know, you're asking me if you should see an attorney. That's an easy answer. See the attorney, you know, instead of trying to get your fill-in-the-blank will or something.
Oh.
You know, you really need to sit down with an attorney, and so that the value is high because you can avoid these kinds of problems like litigation down the road. You know, the other thing I wanted to get to, so let's say you've met with somebody, Jim, and you've talked to them, and it looks like they've got, you've gone through your formula. It looks like they've got a good case. Then you go through, obviously, the flip side of what we talked about earlier on the program about the actual lawsuit.
Right.
And let's say that you've already gone through potential settlements and everything else, and it's just nothing's working, and you are then going to be in a position to advise them, okay, we need to now, we got to bring this into a head. What happens?
Well, then if you're unable to resolve it short of litigation, then I, as an attorney for the plaintiff, and that's the one bringing the action, would draft a lawsuit. Again, let's say there's money owed. The person that I represent would be the plaintiff against the person that owes the money versus the defendant. And you would make the allegations that on July 1st, 2012, plaintiff loaned defendant $10,000, a copy of the promissory note attached. Defendant was supposed to pay back by December 1st, 2012, but defendant failed to do so, therefore defendant breached his agreement. And if the attorney, again, if there's a promissory note, has an attorney fee provision, you want damages of $10,000 plus interest plus attorney fees and court costs. Sign that. You file that with the clerk of the court. Now, there's several hundred dollars to file a lawsuit to boot.
True.
So that can be expensive. And then you procure the summons, and then you send it to the sheriff's department to serve, just like we were talking about before.
Right.
And then the ball starts rolling. Then it's balls in the defendant's court to file responsive pleadings or not. And then you go through the discovery phase, and then eventually, hopefully, settle the matter. And if you can't settle it, then you go to have a trial.
All right, well, that's the next thing I want to get to. Let's grab one more quick break. We got Jim Rose on the line, ricerosenlaw.com, 386-257-1222. Break, and we'll be right back.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're right back with Jim Rose to help us understand this whole big litigation thing that hopefully you never have to deal with, but if you do, well, you want to be represented by a good attorney like Jim Rose, and the good people over at Rice Rose Law and .com is the website. So, Jim, right before the break, I kind of teed it up for you. So, whether you're on the suing side or the receiving side, you're the plaintiff or you're the respondent. Is that the right word?
Defendant, plaintiff, defendant. If it's a family law matter, it's a petitioner respondent.
Okay. All right. Well, thank God I haven't had to deal with that one. I'd be in big trouble. So you're in that. It's time for trial.
Right.
So what happens? What's the process?
Well, the way the process works, if you've done your discovery, you've been unable to resolve the case, and you ask the court for called request for docket and a trial date. Then you'll get a pretrial order that requires you to give certain information that if you have not already given it, witness list, exhibit list, et cetera. And in our circuit, we also require to go to mediation before you go to trial. And mediation is the alternate dispute resolution. It's been around here for about 25 years, and it's very effective. Mediators are good people. A mediation occurs when you have the plaintiff and his counsel comes to the defendant and defendant and his counsel goes to a mediator, and the mediator is a third-party neutral person, not a judge, doesn't rule on anything, but you go to a mediation, and essentially the mediator places the plaintiff and the plaintiff's counsel in one room, the defendant and defendant's counsel in another room, and kind of shuttles back and forth to try to see where the parties agree, where they disagree, and to how much they disagree, and try to come to some kind of resolution of the case. And hopefully you would get a settlement agreement out of that mediation. As I said, you're probably in mediation, probably successful, probably 80-90% of the time.
That's a high percentage.
It is. I was surprised, particularly in things like family law back when I used to do family law, high conflict situations where people are, very emotional. But it's been remarkably effective. And as the mediator says, is that this is your chance to settle your case.
Yeah, it goes to court. What happens?
Then the guy in the black robe or the jury is going to settle your case for you, and you have absolutely no control over it. And so what it does is, one, you get closure. Second, you turn off the spigot as far as attorney's fees and costs and the time it's taking you. And third, that you have control of how you the outcome. And
yeah, because you can't do that with a jury.
No, they come back and here's what I'm ruling or here's what the jurors rule.
So that's final.
Yeah. But if you're unsuccessful at mediation, then you go and try the case. And when you try the cases, you put witnesses on and you present exhibits to the judge or the jury. And then, for example, if you have the person that owes you money, you would present the promissory note into evidence. The court would review it. And the defendant, if the defendant says, I don't owe the money, he would present whatever payments or testify to whatever services he provided in lieu of paying back or whatever the defense may be. And a lot of times, David, it comes down to who the judge and the jury believe. Conflicting it for, we get a lot of times people have done things orally, $10,000 in cash, no receipt, but I did do it. And the guy says, I never got it. And it's just a matter of eyeballing them. And that's a scary thing.
That is a scary thing. But so hopefully this has been helpful for people that they understand this process, because you hope they're never involved. But if they are, they definitely need to take it seriously and get the right kind of representation. And Jim Rose, I thank you very much for being on our program today.
David, I appreciate being on.
All right. Thank you so much.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.